Brianna became agitated and started having auditory hallucinations. Her parents sought help for Adriana, who was admitted to a psychiatric hospital and prescribed antipsychotic medications, which didn't help. The next 3 months were a torturous road of different doctors and multiple medications at a cost of nearly $100,000. Adriana had become a shadow of her former self. Desperate, her parents brought Adriana for a scan, which showed areas of unusually high activity. It caused us to look deeper at the potential causes of her symptoms, such as an infection or toxicity. It turned out Adriana had Lyme disease, an infection often caused by deer ticks. Treatment with antibiotics helped her get her life back. Imaging immediately decreases stigma, as people begin to see their problems as medical and not moral. We have nothing else in psychiatry that is this powerful or immediate. Imaging increases treatment compliance because people want a better brain so they can have a better life. Steve. After I gave a lecture to a group called the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, NAMI, one of the NAMI officers brought her son, who had paranoid schizophrenia and addiction issues, to one of our clinics. Steve had been living on the streets of San Francisco and could not live at home because of his violent, erratic behavior and his refusal to get treatment. During his clinical interview, our historian knocked on my door and told me she didn't feel comfortable seeing Steve alone. He scared her. As I introduced myself to Steve, it was clear he was psychotic and was agitated being at the clinic. He told me in a loud voice that he would not take medication and I couldn't make him. To settle the tension, I asked if I could get him a cup of water. As we talked, I told him I didn't want him to do anything he didn't want to do, but wondered if it would be okay to scan his brain. Seeing the brain spec scans on the walls of the clinic, he was curious and agreed to be scanned. After his scan, we looked at it together. It showed high levels of damage. When I showed him a healthy scan compared to his scan, he just stared at them without saying a word. After about 5 minutes, Steve looked at me, which was the first time we actually had eye contact, and he asked if I could help him. The scans helped him make the shift from being angry and in denial to being open to working with me to get a better brain. This was a pivotal moment, one that the scans had given us with our patients thousands of times before. I told him we had better medications than the ones he had been on in the past and prescribed a low dose of a new antipsychotic medication. I then gave him an appointment for 3 weeks later. A week later, I walked into my waiting room to get a new patient and saw Steve's mother sitting there and wondered to myself why she was at the clinic without an appointment. All of a sudden, she stood up, grabbed me, and kissed me on the cheek. "Thank you," I said, bewildered. "Why did you do that?" "You can't believe how much better Steve is," she said. "He's not hallucinating, he's not aggressive, and we can have him at home. I am so grateful." A few weeks later, I saw Steve for his first follow-up visit. He was remorseful for his prior behavior and grateful he was feeling better. We did a follow-up scan, which was dramatically better. I put his original scan next to the new one and asked him, "Which brain do you want?" He said, "I want the healthy one." "Then you have to take your medication," I replied. The scans made all the difference for Steve and those he loved. Imaging completely changes the discussion around mental health. What if mental health was really brain health? With the pervasive stigma around mental health issues, few people want to see a psychiatrist. But almost everyone wants a better brain. Imaging helps to create brain envy. When people see their own brains, they usually want it to be better, like Steve. So they treat it better. Know better, do better. 9. Psychiatric illnesses are not single or simple disorders in the brain. Each one has multiple types that require unique treatments. One treatment will never work for everyone. Based on our imaging work, it is very clear that giving someone the diagnosis of depression is exactly like giving them a diagnosis of chest pain. No doctor would do that because it doesn't tell you what is causing it or what to do for it. The same thing is true for psychiatric illness. Depression is a cluster of symptoms, not a disease. It has too many causes, and each requires its own treatment. Rather than simply give you a diagnostic label based on symptoms, we need to understand why you are anxious, or have attention problems, or temper issues. Based on our imaging work, I've described 7 types of anxiety and depression, 7 types of ADD, 6 types of addicts, and 5 types of overeaters. 10. Brain aging is optional. Work to boost your brain's reserve. On average, we lose about 85,000 neurons a day. Little kids usually have very active brains, and older people have significantly less brain activity. While our skin withers as we age, the same process typically happens in the brain. In a study of over 30,000 patients, we showed that the cortex, or surface of the brain, typically gets less and less active with age. Your day-to-day behavior is either accelerating this process, or it is decelerating it. Brain aging is optional if you diligently use the right strategies. One of my favorite ways to explain this is through the lens of brain reserve, which is the extra cushion of brain function you have to help you deal with whatever stresses come your way. The more reserve you have, the more resilient you are, and the less impact aging has on your life. In explaining brain reserve, I often draw a line going down on the whiteboard in my office for my patients. At some point along the line in the graph, you cross a certain threshold indicating that your reserve is gone and symptoms like depression, anxiety, memory problems, brain fog, or temper problems start to occur. When you were conceived, your brain had a lot of potential for reserve. But if your mom smoked, ate bad food, was chronically stressed, or had infections, your reserve was being depleted even before you were born. If, on the other hand, your mother was healthy, ate well, took her vitamins, and was not terribly stressed, she was helping to increase your reserve. And the rest of your life, you are either increasing or decreasing your reserve. For example, if you fell down a flight of stairs at the age of 3 and hit your head, even though you had no symptoms, you decreased your reserve. If you started smoking marijuana as a teenager, you decreased your reserve further. Then if you played tackle football or hit a lot of soccer balls with your head, there was even less reserve, even though you might not yet be symptomatic. Think of it this way. Take 2 soldiers who are in a war. They are in the same tank and are both exposed to the same blast injury at the same angles. One of them walks away unharmed. The other one is permanently disabled. Why? It depends on the level of brain reserve that they had prior to the accident. One soldier had more reserve because he took good care of his brain His parents fed him well, he had lots of educational opportunities, and they didn't let him play football. The other soldiers started lower on the line with less reserve. They're both effective at their jobs, but they started at different places, and even though the blast diminished both of their reserves, the one with more reserve remained functional. Aging is the same way. Most of the people we see at Amen clinics start below the dotted line and are symptomatic. Getting well is not just about becoming symptom-free. It is also about boosting brain reserve and getting back above the line, which requires three simple strategies. Brain envy, you have to really care about it, avoiding anything that hurts your brain, and engaging in regular brain-healthy habits. Every day, you are either boosting or stealing your brain's reserve. You are either aging or rejuvenating your brain. When you truly understand this concept, you have a lot more influence in how fast your brain ages. 11. You can change your brain and change your life. You are not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better, and we have proven this in scientific studies and in our clinical practice on thousands of patients. There are many smart ways to enhance, treat, and optimize the brain, including diet, exercise, supplements, medications, psychotherapy, new learning, transcranial magnetic stimulation, neurofeedback, and more. The rest of this book will give you the tools we use at Amen Clinics to help our patients change their brains and their lives. For now, here is one of my favorite stories. Holly worked as a chef. She was a very talented woman with a big heart. However, her boss noticed that she was moody, prone to tears, and overly sensitive when given feedback. Her sensitivity and moodiness caused stress in the workplace. Rather than terminate her employment, her boss paid for her to be scanned and evaluated at Amen Clinics. Her spec scan showed low overall activity, especially in her prefrontal, temporal, parietal, and occipital lobes. The low activity was in a pattern commonly seen after multiple brain traumas. During her childhood, she was physically and emotionally abused and was in a car accident as an adult. Based on her history and spec findings, Holly was put on a group of brain-supporting supplements, including a high-quality multiple vitamin, 5.6 grams of fish oil, and vinpocetine, ginkgo, and phosphatidylserine. After a month, Holly's employer noticed a marked improvement in her mood, focus, humor, and overall attitude. She became an indispensable employee. After 3 months, Holly also noticed the difference and was able to more quickly pay off her debts because she was making better decisions. Holly's follow-up scan was also improved. Underperformance at work can devastate a person's life and waste valuable resources. Virtually no employer ever thinks about their most valuable asset, the collective health of the brains of their employees. Thankfully for Holly and her family, the brain was part of their everyday consciousness. You are not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. 12. Get it, give it away, keep it forever, change the world. Who you spend time with matters. Both healthy and unhealthy habits are contagious. Research published in the New England Journal of Medicine found that one of the strongest associations of obesity was the people with whom you spent the most time. This multi-generational heart study looked at data from over 12,000 subjects over a 30-year period. Subjects who had a friend that was obese had a 57% chance of also being obese. If the two individuals identified each other as being strong friends, the figure shot up to 171%. And this relationship held even if the subjects didn't live in the same area. Sibling relationships also proved important. Having an obese sibling was related to a 40% increase in the chance of obesity. Clearly, we influence each other, both for good and bad. Take this as a powerful motivator to be a good role model and a positive influence on the people you love. We know that when health-conscious friends improve their own health, their friends' health also improves. You can be the one who encourages others to do better by doing better yourself. And the more you help others, the more you will help yourself. I like to think of it this way. Get it, give it away, keep it forever, change the world. Lori Heiselman is a great example of this principle. She was the director of the Salvation Army's largest drug treatment program in Anaheim, California. She followed my work for many years and came to value brain health. The more she learned, the more she realized she had to get her own health under control, and she took my wife's health class at the clinic. Lori ended up losing 55 pounds and a litany of her own health challenges, such as rosacea and irritable bowel issues. As she got better, her husband started to engage in better health habits, as did her children and her grandchildren. One of my favorite pictures is of Lori drinking a green drink with her 5-year-old grandson. Lori got healthy and gave that health to her husband, children, and grandchildren. But then she realized that she interacted with hundreds of substance abusers and staff at the Salvation Army who also needed brain health. So she proceeded, despite opposition, to create a brain-healthy treatment program with the help of my wife Tana and myself that included classes on brain health and much of what you'll learn in this book. The results were truly spectacular. Many of the drug addicts showed improvement in their moods, mental clarity, and judgment. We saw fewer relapses and more overall success. Because Lori became a brain warrior, she not only felt better, she created better brain health in her family and in those she served. Two of Lori's favorite stories are William and Thomas. William said, "As the days went by, my mind began to clear, plus my focus, memory, and even speaking abilities were better. And I lost weight, and now I have a six-pack, the kind that will not get me arrested." Thomas said, "When I first came to the program, I was depressed, hopeless, no future, overweight, gloomy and foggy, all the negative things you can think of. I had failed my GED 3 times. Now, by putting these principles into my life, my mind is clearer, faster, and energized, and I have passed the GED. I love how he concluded his letter to us. "My life was a mess. Now it is a message. I have been tested. Now I have a testimony. I was a victim. Now I am victorious. I went through trials. Now I am triumphant." You can be triumphant too by obtaining brain envy and putting these principles into your life. This is how you can be the agent for change. Reaching out to others so that you can get brain healthy together can create a brain healthy system. There are many benefits to your brain health, your well-being, the way you look and feel, and the quality of your relationships. It's a win-win for everyone, and it all starts with you. But it's not just about you. It's about generations of you. A new field of genetics, called epigenetics, has grown up in the last 20 years. Epigenetics means above or on top of the gene, and refers to the recent discovery that your habits and emotions can impact your biology so deeply that it causes changes in the genes that are transmitted to the next several generations. It is these epigenetic marks that tell your genes to switch on or off or express themselves loudly or softly. It is through epigenetics that immediate environmental factors like diet, stress, toxins, and prenatal nutrition can affect the genes that are passed to your offspring and beyond. It is not just about you. It is about generations of you. For instance, a 2006 study showed that boys who started smoking cigarettes before puberty, say at age 11 or 12, increased the risk of obesity in their children. This means that a dumb decision at the age of 11 can cause disastrous results for later generations. And obesity is just the beginning. Some researchers believe that epigenetics holds the key to understanding certain cancers, forms of dementia, schizophrenia, autism, obesity, and diabetes. Clearly, your behavior matters beyond yourself and is an important reason to get healthy now. I am not a big believer in baby steps. I think for you to get healthy and stay that way, you need to make a serious commitment. My wife, Tana, who is my partner in helping people get well, says that to get really healthy, people have to jump the canyon, which you cannot do in baby steps. It takes a leap to leave behind a toxic lifestyle. Summary of the 12 principles of the Amen Clinics. 1. Your brain is involved in everything you do and everything you are. 2. When your brain works right, you work right. And when your brain is troubled, you are much more likely to have trouble in your life. 3. Your brain is the most amazing, energy-hungry organ in the universe. 4. Your brain is the consistency of soft butter and housed in a really hard skull with multiple sharp bony ridges, making it easily injured. 5. Many things hurt the brain. 6. Many things help the brain. 7. Certain systems in the brain are designed to do certain things, and problems in these systems tend to cause specific symptoms that can benefit from specific treatments. 8. Looking at the brain gives many powerful insights not possible through listening to symptoms alone. 9. All psychiatric illnesses are not single or simple disorders in the brain. Each one has multiple types that require unique treatments. One treatment will never work for everyone. 10. Brain aging is optional. Work to boost your brain's reserve. 11. You can change your brain and change your life. 12. Get it. Give it away. Keep it forever. Change the world. Chapter 2. Stop flying blind. Start feeling better. An introduction to the Amen Clinic's method. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Attributed to Albert Einstein. Our largest referral network to Amen Clinics is our own patients and their families. People come from all over the world for our help because our method is very different from those of our colleagues. In this chapter, I'll outline the step-by-step process we use, called the Amen Clinics method, and help you apply it to your own life. Since 2010, we have studied the success rates of our new patients. As I will describe, we do a thorough evaluation and then give each person a treatment plan targeted to his or her individual brain. Then we call them at 6 weeks, 3 months, and 6 months for follow-up. At 6 months, we ask them to rate their progress, better, same, worse, and how compliant they were with our recommendations, very, somewhat, not at all. The study made it crystal clear that in general, we see people with complex issues who have failed with multiple healthcare providers. On average, the first 2,500 patients had 4.2 diagnoses, such as a combination of ADD, depression, anxiety, and addictions, failed with 3.3 medical or mental health providers before coming to us, and tried 6 different medications. After 6 months, 77% of our patients reported they were better. The number went up to 84% when accounting for the patients who allowed one of our doctors to do their follow-up treatment at Amen Clinics. 85% reported an improved quality of life. Our study was published in the peer-reviewed medical journal Advances in Mind-Body Medicine. In a 2014 Canadian study, non-Amen Clinics clinicians and researchers using our method found that psychiatric patients who underwent SPECT-guided treatment improved significantly more than patients who did not. The Amen Clinics method in 7 easy steps. Step 1. Know the 4 circles. Even though we are known for our brain SPECT imaging work, the fact is that we gather detailed clinical information on all of our patients, assessing the 4 circles of brain health: biological, psychological, social, and spiritual. People don't get sick or better in isolation. Understanding the 4 circles helps us understand each person from a whole person perspective. It also gives us important directions for treatment and brain optimization, which also occur in these 4 circles. A detailed explanation of each circle will be discussed in Chapter 3. Step 2. Know your brain. We gather information on how your brain physically functions through our work with brain SPECT imaging and possibly other tests, such as quantitative EEG, QEEG. This has been one of the biggest breakthroughs of our work. Without looking at how your brain functions, professionals are really just guessing, and even though they're educated guesses, it is often not good enough for people who are suffering with treatment-resistant ADD, depression, panic disorder, temper problems, obsessions, compulsions, or addictions. We generally do 2 SPECT studies on patients, including one performed while doing a concentration task and one at rest. We have found that doing both studies is very helpful, just like doing a stress test of the heart. Some issues show up better when you push the brain to work, some show up better at rest. For those who cannot get scanned, we also use the Amen Clinics Brain Health Assessment to help predict what the SPECT study might look like. You can take it online at www.amenclinics.com. The assessment is not as accurate as a scan, but it can be very useful in helping to target treatment and is used by medical and mental health professionals around the world. You can learn more about our work with imaging in Chapter 4. Step 3. Test your brain. At Amen Clinics, Step 3 involves assessing the function of our patients' brains using a sophisticated computerized neuropsychological test called WebNeuro that takes about 35 minutes to complete. The test also gives us an overall brain health score and provides us with an objective measure of how your brain works, especially in the areas of motor coordination, processing speed, sustained and controlled attention, flexibility, inhibition, self-control, memory, and executive function, judgment. In addition, the test measures stress, anxiety, mood, and your ability to read emotions. Scores are also obtained on emotional resilience, social capacity, and one's tendency to be positive or negative. I really like this test because it lets us know where each person is starting from. I often repeat this test on patients after 2 to 6 months to see if we are making the progress we want. You can take this test in our Brain Warrior community, Brain Fit Life, at www.mybrainfitlife.com. I recommend people take it as they start listening to the book and then again every few months to see their progress. Step 4. Know your important numbers. It is essential to know your important health numbers, such as body mass index, height to waist ratio, vitamin D, testosterone, and thyroid levels. If your important numbers are not optimal, your brain won't be either. We'll talk about how you can improve your numbers in Chapter 5. Step 5. Know the brain systems that run your life. This is another innovation of our work. If you know which brain system or systems might be working too hard or not hard enough, then we can target treatment specifically to what your brain needs. I'll discuss 5 brain systems: limbic, basal ganglia, prefrontal cortex, anterior cingulate gyrus, temporal lobes, what they do, what happens when things go wrong, and how to balance them in chapters 6 through 15. Using this information on brain systems, chapter 16 will discuss the 7 types of ADD, 7 types of anxiety and depression, 6 types of addictions, and 5 types of overeaters. Step 6. A personalized program targeted to your brain. Taken together, all of this information leads to a targeted 4 circles understanding of the problems, and now a 4 circles plan to optimize your brain and your life, as will be discussed throughout the book. Step 7. Boost brain reserve. Step 7 addresses how you can boost brain reserve, increase your resilience, reverse illness, and significantly decrease your risk of Alzheimer's by becoming a brain warrior for life. We'll discuss this in detail in chapters 19 and 20. You can watch an animation of the Amen Clinics method at www.amenclinics.com. Chapter 3. Assess and optimize the 4 circles of your life. When I was a first-year medical student at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, our dean, Dr. Sid Garrett, gave one of our first lectures. The lecture on how to help people of any age for any problem has stayed with me for the last 37 years. Dr. Garrett told us, always think of people as whole beings, never just as their symptoms. He insisted that whenever we evaluated and treated anyone, we should take into consideration the 4 circles of health and illness. Biological, how your physical body functions. Psychological, developmental issues and how you think. Social, social support and your current life situation. Spiritual, your sense of meaning and purpose. At the Amen Clinics, we use these 4 circles to take a balanced, comprehensive approach to assessment and healing. These principles have impacted my own life and career, and once you understand them, they can help you heal in the most balanced way possible. biological factors. The first circle to evaluate is your biology, the physical aspects of your brain and body and how they function together. The brain is like a supercomputer with both hardware and software. Think of your biology as your hardware. In order for it to operate at peak efficiency, its machinery, cells, connections, chemicals, energy, blood flow, and waste processing, needs to work right. Within the biology circle are factors such as your genetics, overall physical health, nutrition, exercise, sleep, and hormones, as well as infections and environmental issues such as exposure to toxins. When the brain's biology is healthy, all of these factors work together to maximize your success and sense of well-being. When trauma, toxins, illness, or infections affect your biology, you are much more likely to suffer with various symptoms. For example, when you don't get enough sleep, you have overall decreased blood flow to your brain, which disrupts thinking, memory, and concentration. Likewise, a brain injury hurts the machinery of the brain, causing you to struggle with depression, thinking, and memory issues, and temper problems. When you eat a high-sugar or simple carbohydrate diet, your blood sugar often becomes unbalanced, causing you to feel sluggish and foggy-headed. Psychological factors. Psychological factors fall into the second circle. This includes how we think and talk to ourselves, the running dialogue that goes on in our minds, as well as our self-concept, body image, past traumas, overall upbringing, and significant developmental events. Being raised in a reasonably happy home, getting positive messages growing up, and feeling confident with our abilities and comfortable in our bodies all contribute to good psychological health. When we struggle in any of these areas, we are less likely to be successful. If we perceive ourselves as unattractive or as somehow less able than our peers, trouble starts to brew. If our thinking patterns are excessively negative, harsh, or critical, that will have a negative impact on our moods, anxiety levels, and ultimately our ability to focus. Developmental issues such as being adopted, having been neglected or abused, or experiencing a significant loss or trauma as a child are also significant. Children often believe that they are the center of the universe. So if something bad happens during childhood, such as a child's mother dying of cancer, the child may think it is his fault and spend the rest of his life racked with guilt. Past successes and failures are part of this circle, as are hope and a sense of worth and personal power or control. The social circle. The social circle is next. It includes the quality of one's relationships and any current life stressors. When we have great relationships, good health, a job or endeavor we love, and enough money, our brains tend to do much better than when any of these areas are troubled. Dealing with difficult life circumstances elevates stress hormones and makes us more vulnerable to illness. Depression is often triggered by stressful life events such as school failure, marital problems, family dysfunction, financial difficulties, health problems, work-related struggles, or losses. And as we've touched upon, the health habits of the people with whom you spend time have a dramatic impact on your own health and habits. The spiritual circle. Beyond the biological, psychological, and social aspects of our lives, we are also spiritual beings. To fully heal and be our best, it is important to recognize that we are more than just our bodies, minds, brains, and social connections. We must ask ourselves deep questions. such as what does my life mean? What is my purpose? Why am I here? What are my values? Do I believe in God or a higher power? How does that manifest in my life? What is my connection to past generations, future generations, and the planet? Having a sense of purpose, as well as connections to past and future generations, allows us to reach beyond ourselves to affirm that our lives matter. Without a spiritual connection, many people experience an underlying sense of despair or meaninglessness. Morality, values, and a spiritual connection to others and the universe are critical for many people to feel a sense of wholeness and connection. Research from multiple sources reports that having a sense of meaning and purpose helps you be healthier and live longer. Amen Clinic's Four Circles Treatment: Biological, Psychological, Social, and Spiritual. Our treatment plans are directed toward optimizing the four circles. For example, biological interventions may include diet, exercise, supplements, medication, neurofeedback, transcranial magnetic stimulation, sleep apnea evaluations and treatment, hyperbaric oxygen, and others. Psychological strategies may include different forms of psychotherapy, including cognitive therapy, or not believing every stupid thought you have, hypnosis, meditation, interpersonal psychotherapy, and dealing with past traumas or other emotional issues. Social interventions may include appropriate school or work accommodations, relationship counseling, parenting classes, and social skills training. Spiritual interventions include an in-depth conversation on what your life means, why you are here, and major life goals. In addition, it may also include discovering connections to past and future generations and the planet. Chapter 4: How Imaging Changes Everything. Stories from the Revolution. From miracles and meat cleavers to flashers, tooth fairies, and trains. You can understand the four circles of your life and still completely miss getting the right help. It is also important to understand how your brain functions. At Amen Clinics, we have three ways to evaluate brain function. 1. Brain imaging, either with SPECT or another tool such as quantitative EEG. 2. Amen Clinics Brain Health Assessment. 3. Neuropsychological Assessments. As mentioned, we do a study called Brain SPECT Imaging, which evaluates blood flow and activity patterns. SPECT gives us a direct look at how the brain works. In a scientific study we recently published, getting a SPECT scan changed the diagnosis or treatment plan in nearly 8 out of 10 patients. Having a scan allows us to see what is happening in the brain that may be the cause of someone's emotional and cognitive struggles, such as when the brain works too hard or not hard enough, or if it has patterns consistent with trauma or toxic exposure. Without a scan or another measure of brain function, it is like throwing medication-tipped darts in the dark at someone's brain. Despite the intense criticism I received from my colleagues early on for doing something outside the box of psychiatry's standard of care, I persisted in ordering SPECT scans because of the amazing outcomes this technology allowed me to witness. In this chapter, I will share some of my favorite stories and 10 lessons they taught me. 1. Daniel. Seeing my own brain created brain envy. I had to have a better brain. Most people never think about their brains because they never look at them. We worry about the wrinkles in our skin because we can see them. Or maybe you fret about your waistline because you hate how it looks in the mirror. Our eyes give us feedback when we aren't looking optimal. Your brain, on the other hand, only gives you indirect clues that something is not right. Perhaps your mood is off, you can't sleep, or you start forgetting words that used to roll off your tongue. I never really cared much about my own brain until I started looking at the brain. I had no problems doing jumps on my bicycle when I was 10 and falling on my head. That's what tough boys did. You just got up. I played tackle football using my helmet as a spear. The helmet made me feel invincible. I never gave a thought to the first bout of viral meningitis, a brain infection, I had at age 18 when I was in basic training in the Army, or to the second bout during my medical internship 10 years later. I didn't see any problem with drinking a half gallon of soda a day, carrying extra weight, or being constantly stressed in medical school and beyond, surviving on 4 hours of sleep at night. I was tough. Even as I progressed through my psychiatric training, military work, and starting a private practice, I never really thought about my own brain. If a physician who specializes in diseases of the brain doesn't really think about his brain, why would you? It all changed in the spring of 1991 when I started working with SPECT. Over the course of a few months, I ordered many SPECT scans on my patients and found them extremely helpful. They were so valuable that I started scanning people in my own family. My aunt who had a panic disorder, a cousin who was suicidal and depressed, my mother, my children, and then myself. Like many men, I had the belief that I was 100% normal, maybe even a little better than normal. Despite my history of playing football and meningitis, I expected to see a very healthy brain. After all, I had never done drugs, didn't smoke, and rarely drank alcohol. Yet my brain did not look healthy. In fact, it looked like the brain of an older man. Yuck, I thought. I need to do better. That same week, I scanned my 60-year-old mother, Dory, who had an unbelievably beautiful brain. In fact, she became our poster example of a healthy brain. Her brain was full, even, symmetrical, and showed healthy activity throughout. Her beautiful brain function was reflected in the myriad healthy activities and relationships she had. My mother has always been the best friend to her 7 kids, 22 grandkids, and now 22 great-grandkids. I had brain envy. I wanted my brain to be like hers. Since then, I have thought about ways to optimize my brain and the brains of my patients, readers, family, and friends. Working to improve my own brain function eventually led me to have a better body. With better function in the front part of my brain that houses judgment and impulse control, my decisions were better, as were my forward-thinking skills. The scan I had 22 years after the first one was much better. Brain envy made my life better, and I want the same for you. Here are my current 4-circle interventions. Biological, great nutrition, exercise, sleep, and supplements. Psychological, I work hard not to believe every stupid thought I have and get therapy when I need it. Social, have a supportive spouse and staff at Amen Clinics. Spiritual, focus on a deep sense of purpose for my family and work. It is clear that our society is going the wrong way in terms of brain health. Most people just don't care about their brains. We let our kids play football, hit soccer balls with their heads, and do dangerous gymnastic routines. There is little brain envy because most people never look at or think about their brains. Since most people never get their brains scanned or tested, they have no idea when the trouble starts. When our patients see their own brain scans, they often develop brain envy and want their brain to be better. I once treated a 16-year-old boy who frequently abused drugs, including cocaine. But when he saw what the cocaine was doing to his brain, he immediately stopped. When I told him that his brain would not finish developing until he was 25 and that his drug abuse might permanently delay his development, he said, "Oh, I don't want that," and just stopped using. That was a sign of intelligent life. 2. Sally, self-forgiveness. You mean it's not all my fault? Sally, a 40-year-old woman, had been hospitalized under my care for depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideas. In my clinical interview with her, I discovered that she had many adult ADD symptoms, such as short attention span, distractibility, disorganization, and restlessness. She had an ADD son, a frequent tip to diagnosing ADD in adults, had never finished college, despite having an IQ of 140, and she was employed below her ability. When I talked to her about the possibility of having ADD, she didn't think the diagnosis applied to her because she could concentrate if she was really interested, a common misconception among people with ADD. She was resistant to treatment. Since just that morning I had heard my first lecture on SPECT, I asked Sally if we could look at her brain. She enthusiastically said yes and was interested in getting more information to understand herself. We scanned Sally at rest and then again the next day while she performed a concentration task. Her results were abnormal. At rest, she had good overall brain activity, especially in the prefrontal cortex. But when she tried to focus, her brain actually dropped in activity, especially in the prefrontal cortex. When I laid the pictures on the table in her hospital room and explained them to her, she started to cry and said, "You mean it's not all my fault?" This is something I've heard a lot over the years. "Right," I said, taking the glasses I wear when I drive out of my pocket, and said, "Having ADD is just like needing glasses. People who wear glasses aren't dumb, crazy, or stupid. Our eyeballs are shaped funny, and we wear glasses to focus. Likewise, people who have ADD aren't dumb, crazy, or stupid. Their frontal lobe shut down when they're supposed to turn on, and they need help to turn them back on so they can focus. In fact, as you can see, the harder you try, the worse it gets." This discovery helped Sally make sense of her life, and she had a wonderful response to the Four Circles treatment plan. Biological, great nutrition, exercise, sleep, medication. Psychological, psychotherapy to deal with the disappointments from the past. Social, couples therapy and parent training. Spiritual, focus on a deep sense of purpose for her life. In a short time, Sally felt calmer and more focused. She went back to school and finished her degree. Her relationship with her husband and son were better, and she no longer thought of herself as a failure, but rather as someone who needed help for a medical problem. When you understand ADD this way, you realize that not treating it really amounts to neglect. It's like withholding glasses from someone who cannot see. With Sally's positive response to treatment fresh in my mind, I ordered more spec studies on my most treatment-resistant patients. 3. Kate, be careful with psychiatric medications. Kate, a minister's wife, went to her family doctor and told him she was stressed and depressed and couldn't sleep. After a 7-minute appointment, She left his office with three prescriptions, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, an SSRI, fluoxetine or Prozac for depression, a benzodiazepine, alprazolam or Xanax for her anxiety, and a sleeping pill, Zolpidem or Ambien, all prescriptions that suppress overall brain activity. Within 3 days, Kate started to feel better. After a week, she was feeling great. Then, while stopped at a traffic light, a man in a pickup truck pulled up beside her. He winked at her, which was not unusual, as Kate was an attractive woman. But what happened next was very unusual. Kate proceeded to unbutton her blouse and show the man her breasts. Horrified at her own behavior, she sped off, and of course, he tried to follow her. She stopped taking the medicines and came to see us. As part of her evaluation, we scanned Kate after she had been off those medications for several weeks. Her scan showed low overall activity, especially in the front part of her brain. The three medications she was given had all decreased her brain activity further, thereby disinhibiting her judgment, leading to the incident with the unbuttoned blouse. Without looking, there is no way to know if a person needs more brain stimulation or less. Symptoms don't always equate to underlying function. Kate's brain needed more activity. Learning this information helped Kate understand her disturbing behavior, and she got much better with a targeted plan. Biological, great nutrition, exercise, stimulating supplements including rhodiola, ginseng, and green tea to support her mood, and melatonin and magnesium for sleep. Psychological, psychotherapy to learn how to deal with the stress of being a pastor's wife. Social, reconnecting with her husband. Spiritual, prayers for understanding and forgiveness about her past behavior and reconnecting with her sense of mission. When I first started performing SPECT scans, I was often concerned by the visible effects some psychiatric medications had on the brain, particularly benzodiazepines, sleeping medications, and pain pills like hydrocodone and oxycodone. They suppressed brain function in many patients. It was evident on their scans. This evidence was one of the main reasons I started to research natural ways to heal the brain. Recently, there has been a group of published articles that substantiate my observations about these medications, especially benzodiazepines, which increase the risk of Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia, which are all conditions known to be associated with low blood flow to the brain. Aside from increasing the risk of dementia, a significant issue illustrated by Kate's story is that giving someone the wrong or unnecessary medication can cause negative behaviors that put that person in a dangerous situation, costing them relationships, financial security, or even their lives. When I first started our imaging work, there was great controversy around research studies that suggested certain medications increase the risk of violence and suicide. Having been in clinical practice for over a decade at the time, I had exactly the same concern, and scans like Kate's were helping me understand why and who would respond to which medications and diminish the risk of prescribing the wrong ones. 4. Willie. A short fuse on a stick of dynamite. When someone's personality changes, think about the brain. Willie was the kind of guy who got along with everyone. An A student, he had a college scholarship waiting for him, and his future seemed altogether promising, until his head collided with the dashboard of his car during an accident. Although Willie felt dazed, he seemed to be okay by the next day. 3 months later, he got into another accident when he swerved to avoid hitting a dog that had run out onto the street. His head hit the windshield even harder, and this time he had to be sent to an emergency room. After examining Willie, the doctor told him he had nothing to worry about. He had only a minor concussion. In the months that followed, this minor concussion wreaked havoc on Willie's life. His whole attitude and demeanor began to change. Normally a friendly person, he found himself suddenly losing his temper at the smallest things. Where he had once been patient, he now had a short fuse. Where he had once been amiable and calm, he was now always angry. His irritability and constant flares of temper began to alienate his friends and family. The brunt of his anger came to rest on his college roommate and strangely began to center around food. Inexplicably, Willie's appetite had also changed. In just 3 months, he had put on 70 pounds, and he was hungry all the time, often eating all the food in his home. By this time, he was at college and living with a roommate who finally got fed up and asked Willie to eat only the food he bought himself. Willie felt that his roommate was actually trying to hurt him by depriving him of the food he thought he needed. He became consumed with negative paranoid thoughts, and in his mind, the only way to protect himself was to hurt this enemy. One afternoon, Willie took a huge meat cleaver and a butcher knife and waited at the front door for his roommate, a man who used to be his friend. He was going to be instantaneously dissolved, Willie told me later. Yet even as he was gripped by paranoia, some part of Willie's mind was still sane. He saw himself, as if from above, standing behind the door holding these weapons. He knew he was out of control and that he had to stop himself before it was too late. He went to the telephone and called a friend, who then gave him my telephone number, and the immediate crisis was averted. Willie described for me his two accidents and the severity of his personality changes. I immediately ordered a brain spec study, which showed three abnormalities. His anterior cingulate gyrus was working too hard, so he tended to get stuck on negative thoughts. His left temporal lobe was low in activity, which is often associated with paranoia and violent thoughts. And his prefrontal cortex was low, meaning he had trouble controlling the violent thoughts he got stuck on. The minute I saw Willie's brain study, it clearly explained for me the changes that had been occurring.